You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis. COVID cases seem to have plateaued in Southern California, but at a very high level. In LA County alone, someone is dying of COVID-19 every 8 minutes. The great hope, of course, is getting people vaccinated. Here's Governor Gavin Newsom talking about that in his update earlier this week.
We continue to do more to support the needs of getting these vaccines delivered, not only to our partners all up and down the state of California, thousands of them, but administered into people's arms. We talk now often about the last mile and the last inch.
But as you've been hearing, vaccine distribution has been off to a slow start. Dr. Anthony Fauci said again this week that he expects the new normal is just around the corner, with theaters and music venues to reopen, perhaps, fingers crossed, in the fall. But California is currently way off pace to make that dream a reality. KCRW's Kaylee Wells has been following the progress of the vaccine rollout, and she's with us now. Hey, Kaylee.
Hey, Steve.
So we've heard that the state has received nearly 3 million vaccines. But on Monday, Newsom said fewer than 800,000 people had actually been vaccinated. So all these other shots are just sitting in freezers. You know, they have to be stored at a very low temperature, right?
That's right. Yeah. And like you said, the problem isn't the number of shots that we've got. There's a few problems. There's a lack of people to give them quickly. We have a few other reasons. There are tech glitches in the county's vaccination registration system. But we also got slowed down by the fact that, yes, we're in phase 1A, but there's also three tiers within phase 1A. And so if you're trying to prioritize certain healthcare workers before others, you know, the more categories there are, the slower it's going to go. So last week, the state just said, okay, let's just do all of 1A. That was one of the ways they're trying to speed it up. And there's more good news on the way. We're also starting with these giant vaccination centers that are supposed to start opening, like Disneyland, Dodger Stadium, Petco Park, the home of the Padres down in San Diego. Dodger Stadium closed to testing on Monday, but they're supposed to open for vaccinations as soon as Friday. Petco Park could also open this week. And then Disneyland actually just opened today. Their site is crashing with people trying to get appointments. It's already packed, especially now that Orange County is welcoming anybody over the age of 65. So I spoke with Felipe Osorno about this. He is with Keck Medicine at USC. And he says that once these giant vaccination centers really get up and running, he thinks the rate of vaccinations is really going to take off.
So I don't think vaccine is the limiting factor at this point. It's really trying to move through the phases as quickly as possible, not holding those who have vaccine back. And then for us, it's staffing, right? I mean, it just takes a lot of people. Again, I'm very intrigued about these 12,000 a day in Dodger Stadium. We give roughly 600 a day, and that's been a big lift. So 20 times that number blows my mind a little bit.
And on top of all of that, we've got more vaccinators on the way. So Governor Gavin Newsom has approved pharmacists and pharmacy technicians, dentists, National Guard strike teams, paramedics, EMTs, all of them are going to be able to give vaccinations. And so hopefully we're going to see this rate of vaccination go up in the coming weeks.
What is the process, Kaylee, to get your COVID vaccine? I mean, is it like getting a flu shot? Can you just sign up and get it?
It's similar. There's a few more steps involved to it. I actually put that question to Felipe Osorno. He just got his second dose yesterday, and this is how he described the process.
You have to complete a consent form, and then you wait in line to get vaccination. And you get your shot. The nurse documents, because we need to report to the county whom we vaccinated. And then you are escorted downstairs for an observation period of 15 minutes. And this is per CDC guidelines as well. If you're good to go, you get your card that shows that you got vaccinated. You get your appointment for your second dose. You get a nice big sticker that says you got your COVID shot, and then you're good to go.
So obviously the big question, Kaylee, is when do you get to go and get the vaccine? This is for everybody who's listening. We've been administering to frontline healthcare workers for a while now. When does the next phase come?
It's actually funny you ask, because that just changed once again today. So earlier this week, the CDC recommended prioritizing anybody 65 and older. And now just today, Governor Newsom said that counties in California can start vaccinating anybody over 65. So Orange County has already said that those people are eligible starting today. We haven't heard an update from LA County yet, but they've been so far following state guidelines, so that could be coming any minute. In terms of everybody else, we haven't heard any major changes about which jobs get to go in which order. So we knew that phase 1A was healthcare workers and long-term care residents. That's about 3 million people. 1B, originally we were seeing as many as 15 million people in that group, and assuming that those people still get to start around early February. We thought that 1C was going to start in late March. That might get pushed back, given that now it's everybody over 65, so really all in flux. But of course, with a new president getting sworn in next week, we might keep seeing changes like this coming down the pipeline.
So many tiers and phases, Kaylee. I mean, we're talking 1A, that we're in 1A right now, but we have 1B and 1C, and then subheadings in each one of those. I mean, who fits where?
I know. It's not exactly an intuitive system. So 1A, that has healthcare workers and long-term care residents. That's what we're doing now. The people that start in February, 1B tier 1. So that is anybody working in education and childcare, food and agriculture, emergency services. Once those people are vaccinated, we go to tier 2. And now we have kind of some more gray area stuff. So still essential workers, but we're seeing people working in critical manufacturing, industrial, commercial, residential sheltering facilities and services, transportation and logistics, and then anyone who's incarcerated or homeless. And then we move into 1C. And Steve, this is possibly where you and I are going to fit. So this is where anybody over 16 with underlying health conditions gets vaccinated. And then people working in water, energy, hazardous materials, communications, NIT, government operations, financial services. Like I said, we're thinking maybe the end of March, but that might have changed. In terms of your kids, none of these have been approved for anybody under 16. So we don't know about them yet. And if I didn't name any of your jobs, then you're just in what we call the overarching phase 2, which is just everybody else.
That's the what's known as the general population, right?
Exactly.
I've heard of some people jumping the line, Kaylee. People getting this vaccination who perhaps don't fall into any of those categories, at least the early ones. How did they manage to do that?
Yes. So I'm sure that you saw that in that LA Times report from last week. There was a pop-up site where people weren't having to prove their phase 1A qualifications and they just kind of jumped in line. You probably wouldn't be finding that now. If you try it now, officials have said they've totally jumped on that. Now you need your photo ID. You need documentation of your job in the healthcare industry. But yeah, we did have a few people jumping in line. There's also, you've heard of concierge doctors, the kind of people that you can spend thousands of dollars just for their services. They're getting flooded with requests from their very wealthy patients. They don't have the vaccines either. So as far as we know, they're not able to get them, even though they're asking for them. The sort of downside and the concern here, in terms of equality of distribution is that as soon as, say, it opens to 1C, concierge doctors are going to get their own set of vaccines. And so the wealthy people might be the first in each of their phases, but we're not hearing about them jumping the line yet.
All right. Assuming you meet the criteria for whatever tier it is going in, and we're in 1A right now. I know 1B is coming up, 1C just beyond that. Where do you sign up? How do you get the ball rolling?
Anyone eligible right now has been getting notified by their employers, and locations are getting added by the day. So hang tight. There are going to be more answers about that. Newsom also did just announce today that we're going to get a new system that should alert people by text and email whenever they're going to be eligible for a shot. So we haven't actually heard the details of how that's going to come out yet, but that should be coming as early as next week. But the main takeaway here is that the info is always changing. And so if you want to find out the latest of what we know, you got to check out your county's public health website.
KCRW's Kaylee Wells. Kaylee, thank you for the update.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. And now, off to Pillar Point Harbor in Half Moon Bay up in Northern California.
On a day like today, there's no wind, there's some great swells, and, you know, we have the opportunity to go on a jet ski, and I'm going to be able to ride some really long swells and just go soar like the pelicans.
That's Hawaiian big wave surfer Kai Lenny. He's the ultimate waterman. Kite surfing, free diving, stand-up paddleboarding, he does it all. And in the last couple of years, he's become the face of a new type of surfing. It's called hydrofoiling. And that's what he's going to do here today.
The coolest thing about the hydrofoil is the ability to ride the biggest waves in the world, the smallest waves in the world, no waves. Just be out on the water and enjoy it.
A hydrofoil is kind of like a surfboard, but you can ride it just about anywhere there's water. You don't need waves. And that's huge for Southern California. Since the pandemic began, local surf lineups have become so overcrowded. They're like gladiator pits. With a hydrofoil, you get to skip all that. The whole ocean becomes your playground. Well, about 3 years ago, there were hardly any foilers in Southern California. Today, however, there are hundreds. But, there's always a but, hydrofoiling isn't for everyone. It's difficult to learn, it's expensive, and injury to yourself or others or marine creatures around you is a real risk. Reporter Adriana Cargill went out foiling to see what this new type of surfing is all about, and she brings us this story.
The first time you see a hydrofoil, you'll probably be like, that thing? How could that small, weird-looking piece of metal lift a 160-pound adult out of the water and allow them to fly? I'm no physics expert, but it seems to defy gravity.
Yeah, so the hydrofoil, if you ever looked at the top of a house and you see an antenna, kind of looks like an antenna right now because it's sitting on the ground. There's a small board, approximately 4 feet long. The mast, which is the long fin that comes out of the board, is about 30 inches tall.
The board sits on top of the mast, and at the bottom is the actual hydrofoil.
Basically, the best way to describe a hydrofoil is it's an underwater airplane. And so you have a front wing that creates a lot of lift, and you have a back wing as a stabilizer.
When water runs over those wings, it pushes the board up and out of the water, about a foot or two, making it look like the rider is actually flying over the water. Like how a normal airplane lifts when it takes off. The hydrofoil was developed by the U.S. military over 100 years ago to make torpedo boats faster. But it wasn't until more recently that people started putting hydrofoils on boards for recreation. People like Kai Lenny. He didn't pioneer the idea, but he's credited with making it more mainstream. In 2017, he and his brother started the Hydrofoil Company, which designs hydrofoil boards. One of Kai's big innovations was a board that lets you paddle into waves on your own. Previous hydrofoil designs required the rider to be strapped in and then towed into a wave. Right now, Kai's putting his together.
You don't have a star key, do you?
He's going out today to Black Hand Reef, just to the side of Mavericks, the legendary big wave spot.
It's ready to rumble. We should get out there.
He's going to be towed into the waves by a jet ski. And those waves are somewhere in the 20 feet tall range today. So it can get pretty dicey pretty quickly out there.
There you go. Here we
go. Kai throws his board into the water.
Time to foil and not get my hair wet. Don't want to get the hair wet. So if you just idle for it, I'll just skim off.
He grabs the tow rope and steps onto the board as the jet ski leaves the dock.
Keep going.
The hydrofoil lifts out of the water, and Kai hangs onto the rope as the jet ski drags him along. He's suspended about a foot above the water, and it honest to God looks like he's levitating. It's pretty mind-boggling. They head straight out to where the waves are breaking and whip the ski around, throwing Kai into a 10-foot-tall wave about to break. Instead of making the wave, Kai falls off his board. He's hit kelp. One downside to foiling is that it can get caught on sea life. On occasion, foilers have also hit sharks, turtles, or other creatures, because when this thing gets going, it goes really fast, up to 40 miles per hour. Kai's now being towed into a 15-foot-plus wave. He lets go of the tow rope and starts carving up and down its face. He moves so fast it's hard to even clock what he's doing. The foil cuts through the water like a hot knife through butter. It looks like he's dancing on the wave. Kai gets wave after wave as the sun begins to set.
Are we calling it?
Yeah, I think so.
It's getting dark.
She said she wanted to get behind the rope.
All right, you ready?
I did not say that. Okay. Not out here.
No, not out here.
Back in LA, I decided to give it a try myself. So I found Peter de Avila, who teaches hydrofoiling lessons in Marina Del Rey.
Morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Here's his basic tips on riding the foil.
This is completely different. This is its own balance. You can't compare it to anything. So the three angles you're dealing with are pitch, roll, and all, just like an airplane. Exactly. So you're basically flying an airplane with your feet.
There's no one out on the Santa Monica Bay this warm and windless Tuesday morning. When it's my turn, holy smoly is this hard. I get to my feet and stay there for a while, but never get the foil to lift out of the water. It's not like paddle and surfing at all. It really is the art of trying to stay still. Well, you're balancing on something that feels like a unicycle. Ari Sofer is one of Peter's former students, and he says it took him about a year to learn, but he's a huge fan. Even after getting pretty injured.
I dislocated my shoulder like a few months ago. We were doing a downwind run from, I think we were going from Leo Carrillo down to Zuma.
Ari foils with a wing, which is basically like a sail for a windsurfer. So he doesn't need any waves at all. The wing catches the wind and it powers him through the water.
And it was super windy and gusty. I actually fell in the water and then the wind whipped up. And I had the leash attached to my left arm, and the thing like flew over my head and just pulled my arm out of socket.
Now, Ari clips his wing to his life vest instead of his arm. Christian Shubin is the owner of Poseidon Paddle and Surf in Santa Monica, one of the only places in Los Angeles that sells hydrofoils. He says injury risk, difficulty, and the cost are why he thinks hydrofoiling will remain a niche sport. The gear can run between $2,000 and $4,000 to start. But despite all the downsides, Ari says it gives the rider one undeniable upside. The feeling of freedom.
Dude, this is the most revolutionary thing ever. You can literally, with the wing, flies on the wind, it floats, puts no strain on you, and you can use the same thing to power you out into the ocean. It's like the most unbelievable freeing thing. And then you can ride for miles. It's the best feeling ever, just being able to get onto a swell and ride from way out in the ocean, like for an unlimited amount of time. It's like amazing.
Riding free with no crowds for miles, for that, I definitely give hydrofoiling another try. For Greater LA, I'm Adriana Cargill.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. A new art exhibition in Culver City infuses Native American crafts with pop culture, music, and activism. Think a textured celebration that combines graffiti and eye-popping colors, but along with a touch or two of maybe traditional aesthetics. Jeffrey Gibson's show at the Roberts Projects Gallery opened over the weekend, and our art insider, Lindsay Preston-Zappas, is here to give us a preview. She checked it out, and she's editor-in-chief of Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Lindsay, welcome to you.
Hey, Steve.
You got to see this show in person this week. What's the work like? I mean, I see a lot of textures when I see his work. What else do you see?
Absolutely. You're right on with that. Colorful is the word that comes to mind. I mean, it's super bright, all of these beautiful colors of the rainbow, really. And the exhibition, so it includes sculptures, wall works, and drawings. A lot of them include very intricate beadwork and other craft processes and fiber processes. And a lot of these pieces include beaded text that blends these kind of beaded panels with pattern-based painting, which sort of is similar to like an op art style or optical painting. There's also a series of small figurines that are fully embellished with crystals and beads and bells. So there's just so much to look at, so many little details to dive into. It was such a joy to see in person. And Jeffrey Gibson, the artist, is part Choctaw and part Cherokee, and his work really calls upon those craft traditions. So thinking about Iroquois beadwork, for instance, and kind of infusing those traditions with a really contemporary kind of pop sensibility.
It sounds really cool. I mean, I know the name of the exhibition is It Can Be Said of Them. What does that mean?
Right. It's kind of cryptic. This work specifically is in reference to a sister Creta Kent print that celebrates four male leaders: Jesus, Martin Luther King Jr., John F. Kennedy, and Robert Kennedy, all of whom Sister Creta Kent really felt influenced the civil rights movement. So the text in that poster starts with, "It can be said of him," and then goes on to kind of describe these men. So here, Jeffrey Gibson is upending that in a way by saying, "It can be said of them," and kind of replacing that male pronoun him with them to really use a more inclusive and kind of, gender inclusive pronoun.
So gender and gender fluidity, right, is the theme of the show? Is that what's going on here?
It's definitely a major theme across the show. And in several pieces similar to that one, Gibson is kind of bending those pronouns to really point to inclusivity.
It seems, Lindsay, that Gibson really likes to borrow words and phrases from cultural leaders, as you just mentioned, but also musicians as well. I mean, what musical artists inspired this exhibition?
Yeah, so that's really the joy of this work, kind of discovering these references as you dive into each piece. And there's a ton of music references across the show. So, for instance, there's one work that says, "I Could Be Somebody," which is taken from Tracy Chapman's song, Fast Car, which you probably are familiar with.
Of course.
There's a Beatles reference that says, "The love you give is the love you get."
Abbey Road.
Yep, exactly. There's call-outs to Bjork, Terry Callier, and others. So he's really blending in these kind of Native American and craft traditions with pop culture and music. And he talks about that as creating a new language to really describe the world that he lives in today.
There are a couple of punching bags involved in this as well, which, you know, I wonder what that means. I mean, what's the meaning of the bags as part of this exhibition?
Yeah, so that's a format that Gibson has worked in for a while, sort of using punching bags as sort of the base of a sculpture and then beading on top of that or around it. So the fact that these punching bags, right, they're associated with aggression or fighting or kind of challenges, but then they're beautifully beaded and they become unusable through that process. So it really becomes a message of sort of overcoming and hope. And the artist has talked about how the public has really responded to these works in a way that's been almost overwhelming to him. And a lot of people have even shared with him stories of their own struggles and challenges that these works have really brought up in people.
It's really fascinating because you see these punching bags and your first, you know, inclination is to punch.
Yeah.
But then you see the intricacies of the beads, right? And you're like, you have to show restraint.
Exactly. And I think that subversion is really what it's all about.
Can you go? I mean, here we are in this janky time still with COVID-19. Do you have to go online to see this? Can you go see it in person by appointment? How's that work?
This is very much an in-person exhibition. And as I said at the top of the segment, going to see in person and seeing all the details is really stunning. So it is installed in the gallery. However, the gallery has decided to close for the next couple of weeks due to the current COVID surge. Their plan is to open up for appointment towards the end of the month. So you can go to the gallery's website and actually go ahead and book an appointment for later in the month for a socially distant appointment.
Well, it is up at Roberts Projects through February 20th in Culver City. Lindsay Preston Zappas, our art insider and editor-in-chief of Carla. Lindsay, as always, thank you. Happy New Year to you.
Thanks, Steve. You too.
Well, that's it for this evening. What a day. The latest on the second impeachment of President Donald Trump on KCRW, along with thoughtful and careful analysis. The inauguration is a week from today. We'd like to know if you have plans for it. Are you going? What will you be doing there? Tell us what you're doing at kcrw.com/inauguration and subscribe to the show anytime. Join your friends and neighbors in downloading this podcast to come fresh to your feed, kcrw.com/greaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geist, Paul Smith, Ray Guarna, Mario Saavedra, Phil Richards, Amy Toss, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on the show this evening. I'm Steve Chiodakis. Have a great night.